The following program is being brought to you on the Voice America Variety Channel. For more information about our network and to check our additional show hosts and topics of interest, please visit voiceamericavariety.com. The Voice America Talk Radio Network is the worldwide leader in live internet talk radio. Visit voiceamerica.com. The views and ideas expressed on the following program are strictly those of the host or guests and do not necessarily reflect the views and ideas held by the Voice America Talk Radio Network, its staff, and management.
When you turn on the evening news, do you see what you want to see or what you need to see? Welcome to Bread for the Journey, ordinary people doing extraordinary deeds with your host, Mariana Cacciatore. It seems like more often than not, the good news and people that are making it are buried into a two-minute feature piece near the end of the report. What about giving these people and this kind of news a full hour every week? Now, here's your host, Mariana Cacciatore.
Hello and welcome to our show today. I've got my friend, poet and writer, John Fox with us. He's the founder and president of the Institute for Poetic Medicine. John works with educators, counselors and therapists, doctors, nurses and medical students, those in chaplaincy and pastoral care, cancer support, those in the field of substance abuse. He works with hospice volunteers and staff. He brings what he calls poetic medicine to people living with cancer, people who are grieving, children, and young people living with disabilities. The Institute for Poetic Medicine funds a whole range of projects that bring poetry as healer to people. And those projects include people who are homeless, immigrant, and refugee youth, those living with acquired brain injury, and those with moderate to severe mental health challenges. John believes, and so do I, that there are no limits to the places where poetry can reach to do its healing work. And their mission statement at IPM is to awaken soulfulness in the human voice. We're going to do our show in three segments. At the start, we're going to talk about a new book John has contributed to, and the book is called Let the Beauty We Love Be What We Do, Stories of Living Divided No More. And John's chapter is titled Poetry's Call, An Exploration of Let and Letting. So that's what we're going to do in our first segment. In our second segment, we're going to talk about the work of the Institute for Poetic Medicine. And in our third segment, we'll talk about the Institute's certification program, certifying people to become poetry therapists. So let me begin with John's biography. John's a poet and certified poetry therapist, founder and president of the Institute for Poetic Medicine. He's author of the book Poetic Medicine, The Healing Art of Poem Making, and the other book that he has written, Finding What You Didn't Lose, Expressing Your Truth and Creativity Through Poem Making. His work is featured in the PBS documentary Healing Words, Poetry and Medicine. John has written numerous essays and a range of books on subjects of education, writing, medicine, and healing. He most recently contributed the essay called Poetry, Therapy, Mindfulness, and Creativity to a book titled Mindfulness and the Art Therapies, Theory and Practice, published by Jessica Kingsley. And we just spoke about his, which we'll talk about in the first segment, his chapter, Poetry's Call, An Exploration of the Words Let and Letting, in the book, the new book, Letting the Beauty We Love Be What We Do, Stories of Living Divided No More. And that book is edited and facilitated by Sally Z. Hare and Megan Le Boutalier, published by Prose Press. John works throughout the United States in all kinds of settings and has taught in Ireland, England, Israel, Kuwait, Germany, South Korea, and Canada. His work influences practitioners in Greece, Australia, Japan, Philippines, Lithuania, and Peru. He's the past president of the National Association for Poetry Therapy in the years 2003 through 2005, and he lives in Mountain View, California. Welcome to the show, John.
Thanks for inviting me, Mariana. It's good to be here with you.
Good. I'm glad you're here. I'm going to begin with the title of your chapter in Let the Beauty We Love Be What We Do, Stories of Living Divided No More. The title of your chapter is called Poetry's Call, An Exploration of Let and Letting. Can you just tell us, what does this title tell us about your essay? Give us a little window into this essay.
Well, I was invited by Sally Hare, a good friend, who's I've had a chance to work with, combining the work of sort of Parker Palmer's Circle of Trust with poetic medicine. And so much, I think, that happens begins with a connection with relationship. And so that's where the sort of possibility to contribute this chapter came. And then the title of the book is Let the Beauty We Love Be What We Do. And I felt that for me, I wanted to focus on I'm concerned and interested in beauty and love, but I felt that where I could be sort of, where I wanted to investigate was that word let. What does it mean? What does it feel like to let or the letting? And so that's where I put my attention. And it was a sense of, in the chapter, there's also a sense of what's feeling like I had a calling, that there was a calling to this poetry as healer work. But how could I let it happen? What way could I be a participant in letting that happen? And so the chapter that I wrote talks about the things that acted as a catalyst for me to open that sense where I could just let it. In a way, there's a letting go. There's a letting myself into this current, into this flow. And so I talk about the things that were catalysts for me for doing that. Some were like things of feeling really split apart, like just absolutely torn. And in other ways, it was being open to what I don't know. Being open to what I don't know. And right. That's beginning.
Yeah. You know, your essay is divided into four parts. The first one being, you know, the elements that turned you toward doing what you love. Mm-hmm. And we're introduced in this segment to you having chosen the cello as an instrument to learn as a child and teenager, and listening mm-hmm. to Spanish cellist Pablo Casals. And so you write, the first vinyl record I owned at the age of 9 was a live performance by Senior Casals at the Kennedy White House in November 1961. As he played, Casals sighed. I heard him sighing. More than my physical heart, my heart of feeling was made forever active. And I was just struck when I read that about my heart of feeling and why you chose to include this in, you know, at the very beginning of your essay. And I understand it now. You know, I mean, I love poetry so much, and I understand it from deep inside of me what happens around this heart of feeling. But I'd like you to perhaps talk a little bit about the heart of feeling and why you chose to tell us about this awakening in the beginning of your essay.
With Casals.
Right.
Well, I said a few moments ago that there is a sense of let and letting where I felt split. And you know, that comes up quite soon in the next part of that.
Right. And we're going to talk about that.
So this part was a sense of, I mean, speaking about let the beauty and being drawn to that. And so I was in fourth grade, 9 years old. And I think just aware of being drawn by the beauty of the sounds of the cello and wanting to put myself close to that as I could. Mm. And I felt that, although looking back, I mean, it's hard to imagine as a 9 year old, but I could play you that section where Casals is sighing as he plays. It's like the heart, you know, just, and it's being almost unbearable. And in this case, this sense of beauty and sort of a soaring quality that's almost unbearable. And so he let himself do that. I mean, you know, a master technically, able to, but that human part of him that in a performance, you know, at the White House.
Right.
And he's sighing. What? Right. And so in some way, Mariana, that sense also of being a person who has feeling and being able to, bring that into life.
I've talked to so many people who have had an experience or many experiences in their childhood that were moments of awakening or moments of, you know, just, if nothing else, a moment to pay attention to and never forget, right?
Mm-hmm.
And yet we still, as adults, you know, seem shocked that kids know as much as they know or feel as
yeah.
deeply as they feel.
Yeah.
And yet time and again, I hear these stories about, you know, I was so pleased to see that you took us all the way back there when you began this essay about let the beauty we love be what we do. And so, you know, right after that, as you already alluded to, you know, the next segment you talk about is the painful experience of having had your right leg amputated below the knee. Mm-hmm. And I wonder if you might talk a little bit about that in relationship to your calling/letting.
Good way of putting that. I mean, it's, of course, a long story, it wasn't by an accident, a sudden accident. It was a long-term thing. Since I was 4 and a half, I had had severe problems with my leg, had gone into the hospital many times, and the effort was always to try to save it. And then by the time I was 18, between my, say, senior year in high school and my freshman year at Boston University, it just turned for the worse, and it was clear that there was no longer possible to save it. And even I, who had fought so hard to keep it, had to come to the place where I could let it go. And but that was, a kind of a cleaving in so many different ways. To link it to the poetry, I had gone to BU because they had an acknowledged great writing department. And so I was, of course, just a freshman. Things were just getting started, but I had every intention of entering into this creative writing program because had fallen in love with poetry and I wanted to learn how to write it. And but here, at this point, the poetry became a lifeline for me, a plank that I could hang on to in a very big storm that was inside me. And so You know, that was, in some ways, I would say, Mariana, I had to let the poetry, hold me up, make me, it may be able to take at least a next step.
Yeah. Thank you. You know, on page, in your book, on page 229, I'm going to read something from this and then ask you if you wouldn't mind reading to us the poem that you've written called What Understanding Won't Help. You've Sure. written before that, over the past 30 years, I've lived a life where the beauty I love, poetry as healer, is what I do. There are so many blessings to count. I'm glad to be poor at math because I can't keep up with the blessings. I have lost count. That is not to say there aren't doubts, because there are plenty. What about saving for retirement? How can the Institute for Poetic Medicine survive without more funding? That is not to say that because I am doing what I love, sadness stays away from me. It does not. In fact, it could be the backlight of doing what I love that illuminates my melancholy and limitations. Sometimes a voice of mine says, this work is like contributing a drop in the bucket to ease suffering. What's more? My own bucket has a hole in it. These difficulties are present with me. It helps to admit it. I don't even need you to understand. What helps me is your witness. I ask for that staying with in this poem.
What understanding won't help? What understanding won't help? Does the dusk light that rests for moments upon the leaves of a Japanese maple awaken your heart like it does mine? And by awaken, I might mean this: if loneliness was at least willing to not give in to despair because loss felt like a sure thing, could you stand there at the edge with me, aware of and holding these small realities of our day like a great treasure that will not last or give us everything we want, but still deserve our attention, like the leaf that catches last light is lifted up to our sight by a shadow that silently cares for it and everything underneath that can't be said.
We're coming to the close of this segment, and I'm going to close with another reading from your chapter just after this poem, and then we'll take a break, and we'll be right back to our listening audience. Please stay with us. And you have written, this poem speaks to me about the closeness beauty keeps with the aching heart. There is something in the poem regarding the importance of paying attention to life and the necessities of shadow. Poetry offers this miracle. There is a place deeper than paradox where disparities are held together. I feel the paradox, and yet I am part of wholeness. Here is where I feel something beyond what I know. That something is different than my capacity to let. Something meets me in the act of letting and welcomes my willingness. Like the invisible current in a river, poetry as healer has a pull larger than myself. I feel this work comes as a calling, and that call is far beyond my doing. That current and that call only ask this of me, that I pay attention.
Ooh, Tanagan!
Are you happy with just accepting and passing along what the media, politicians, and government are feeding you? Or are you positively sick of it? It's time to get the real facts and form your own decisions. It's time to awaken the sleeper within you. Each week, host Dr. Nick Castellano will uncover various viewpoints and topics designed to inform and present the truth. Today's masses are manipulated by media coverage, and we will not become sheeple. Tune in to Awaken the Sleeper, Thursdays at 1 p.m. Pacific Time, 4 p.m. Eastern on the Voice America Variety Channel.
Dialogue is the single most powerful leadership tool we have to make a difference in the world. Leading Conversations with host Cheryl Esposito creates a place for that dialogue. Tune into the Voice America Business Channel every Friday as Cheryl hosts new conversations among leaders from around the world in business, government, art, economics, and social change. We'll explore big ideas and everyday actions and learn how their own leadership has led them to discover a newfound sense of possibility in the world. Leading Conversations with Cheryl Esposito, bringing big thinkers together in conversations that make a difference, right here on the Voice America Business Channel every Friday morning at 10 a.m. Pacific Standard Time.
What does a visual workplace mean to you? How does it contribute to operational excellence? And what steps do you take to put it powerfully in place? Listen to The Visual Workplace, Work That Makes Sense, to find out. Each week, Dr. Gwendolyn Galsworth, visual workplace expert and award-winning author, shares tools and strategies to help you make the workplace to speak at a glance, without saying a word. Learn to work safer, faster, better, and at far less cost, no matter what business you're in. Tune in to The Visual Workplace every Tuesday at 4 p.m. Pacific, 7 p.m. Eastern on Voice America Business. You are tuned in to Bread for the Journey, Ordinary People Doing Extraordinary Deeds, with your host, Mariana Cacciatore. If you have a question or comment about the program, or have an idea for a person you would like featured on a future program, please send an email to bfjradio@gmail.com. That's bfjradio@gmail.com. And now, back to Bread for the Journey.
Welcome back, and we're here talking to John Fox, poet and writer. And as I said earlier, in our segment here, we'll talk about the work of the Institute for Poetic Medicine, of which John is the founder and president. The Institute really promotes a direct experience of poetry as healer. And, you know, John, I know you and the work that you're doing. You work in, as I said in the introduction, you're working with people in pastoral care. You're working with educators in education, hospice volunteers and staff, people in medicine like doctors, nurses, and medical students, you know, at cancer support centers, mind, body, and soul, health and healing practitioners. So these people find you and they ask you to come into their facilities. What is it that you do when you get there?
Good question. I think it depends on what I'm getting to. Some sense too that in every case I'm generally working with people who have grown up as, you know, they've been born, they've grown up as children, they've come through their lives. And there's a lot of richness in that whole process that often goes unattended to. And so my, in terms of what I bring is a willingness to give attention to people. But then again, who am I meeting? Well, if I'm meeting young medical students at Stanford in the bioethics program there, what I want to bring is a sense of appreciation for the intensity of what their training is putting them through, and offering the poetry in a way the making of a poem is a way to, in a sense, download or get on the page, you know, some of what they feel, because I know that the demands on them are so intense. And particularly in the first couple of years, mostly for like memorizing just all kinds of things. And they had this initial call to medicine and not to lose track of that. That's why the bringing the medical humanities is so important. So, and then maybe they've had experiences with physicians that were either, you know, something that they felt support by or where they felt completely alienated. So I might bring in poems. I will bring in poems written by physicians or written by patients, and then use those poems reading those poems as a catalyst for their own writing. And the foundation, Mariana, is always to create a safe environment so people feel like they can write and if they want to, be able to read their poem. And not just a few weeks ago, I was at this Stanford bioethics program working with young medical students, and they wrote amazing poems about a lot about their experiences with doctors who did not hear them, who did not meet them. So the chance to get to, you know, in the midst of their memorizing all this sort of biomedical stuff, they get a chance to keep their human heart in the picture, which is going to be a real challenge. And so, I mean, that's in
right.
that case.
Right. What? Hard. You know, you use the phrase, the medical humanities, and I was sort of struck, like, I don't think I've ever even heard those words together. We have these, you know, we have these pictures of doctors with, you know, yeah, I mean, at one point you might say they have a cold bedside manner, right? But this work of being right on the front line of so much pain and sorrow. I mean, think about even just the doctor who had to amputate your leg below the knee. Uh-huh. And knowing mm-hmm. full well what that meant for your life. Mm-hmm. And being able to meet that as a human being rather than protect his or her heart from that experience in some ways is so much on the front line of joy and sorrow, which, you know, really some of the greatest gurus and saints of our time spent an entire life working at accepting the reality of life as it is and meeting it in the most human way they could meet it. So this is the work of people, you know, working in medicine, particularly those working on the front lines with patients.
Here's a short poem that's written by a physician, and I would share this with these medical students. This is one, you know, group that I work with. But the poem is written by a physician, an elder physician, who was had bouts of depression. And he actually only started writing poetry later in his life at the recommendation of a physician friend, a wonderful physician poet who's also one of the sort of founders, really, the medical humanities movement, a man named Jack Coulihan, Coulehan. But anyway, Jack encouraged his friend John Wright to write poems, and he began to. And this is a poem he wrote to his psychiatrist. It's called Therapy. And it goes like this. And I'll just preface it a moment. You can't hear this, but you're going to hear me break the two words up into their syllabic. And so in the poem itself, John Wright breaks these words up. And there's a sense of playfulness. And they're the two most medical words in the poem.
Oh, okay.
And I think that's the other thing about for working with all people. I spent a lot of time in my early part of my career working a lot with children, Mariana. And it's like they have been, although they've had wonderful mentors and teachers, the children have taught me the most about what it means to work with adults. And that one of the key parts of that is a sense of being willing to play around with words, to sort of open them up, to play with them, not make sure they have to all stand in the straight line. So this is John's poem. John, it's called Therapy. And it's to his psychiatrist, Philip. You attribute my recovery to nortriptyline, its effects on neurotransmitters, on the amygdala. You barely nod towards your worth, insisting on blood levels, on a therapeutic dose, while I credit half our success to pear trees blossoming white beyond your left shoulder, to the wisteria, its pink flowers hanging lush and fragrant over the portico, to the warmth of your hand. You attribute my recovery to nortriptyline, its effects on neurotransmitters, on the amygdala. You barely nod toward your work, insisting on blood levels, on a therapeutic dose, while I credit half our success to pear trees blossoming white beyond your left shoulder, to the wisteria, its pink flowers hanging lush and fragrant over the portico, to the warmth of your hand. And so, you know, I mean, imagine ourselves for a moment in this situational thing of reading this poem to medical students in their second year, and the idea that, you know, healing is about something much more than just the process of diagnosis and treatment, that there's a whole range of things that can make a difference in the healing. I remember reading that poem. I was in a medical school in the East, and with a group of first-year residents, about a large room of them, about 30. And I remember I read that poem, and there was a pause, and then a woman resident put her hand up, and I said, yes. And she said, with a sense of consternation, I would say, and a sense of sort of longing, but she said, what does that last line mean?
Say the last line to us again.
To the warmth of your hand.
Oh God.
And what in a way my heart broke because what a position to be in, you know, to feel like she, I don't know that I can, and that I had greatly admired her courage among her peers and her colleagues to ask such a question. And I think maybe that's it, Mariana, that, you know, the poetry, because it can get down under the surface and sort of get us all, you know, I mean, it's not always going to do this, but sort of stir us in some way, to just be able to ask the difficult question.
Right. Yeah. In the show description that I wrote for this show, I wrote, there's a way in which poetry reaches down into our depths and places its finger a healing touchstone. Something happens inside and we are changed. And it is truly my experience in that. That poem just made me cry, and then to tell the story of the person who asked that question. So I want to talk for a moment in this segment about some of the, I think we have a sense of what it is you do when you go into a facility. And now there are other people like Lisa DeBuono, who works with an organization called The Clubhouse, who is doing work. Well, she's recently written a book, a guidebook called Poetry as a Tool for Recovery. It's an easy to use guide in 8 sessions that allows people to use it, have a tool and a teaching guide to take a group of people through an 8 session curriculum. Great. Using poetry as a tool for recovery. And she works with an organization called The Clubhouse. Why don't you start? I understand that in The Clubhouse, you know, they're working with people with serious psychiatric diagnoses. Why don't you tell us a little bit about The Clubhouse?
Well, I think, Maria, if I may, what I want to do is talk about Lisa a little bit.
Sure.
One of the things draws me, because I can do this work and I love it, but what I like to do is collaborate and make it generative. And there's lots of people with lots of gifts. And so the Institute for Poetic Medicine is a nonprofit. You know, a major, major part of our funding goes towards supporting people doing work in all kinds of various ways with Poetry as Healer. Lisa is one of our poetry partners and has been for many years. We talked together about possible projects. She had a longtime friend with a director of a clubhouse in Sellersville, Pennsylvania, the Wellspring Clubhouse. And if people want to look up, the clubhouse is a nationwide organization that has centers in about 220 places in the United States, plus in other countries, and it's a a way, a particular way of meeting people with mental health challenges. And it's very, I think appropriate word could be egalitarian. There's not no hierarchy, and everybody makes decisions together. So for instance, when Lisa wrote this guidebook, which is very beautiful, concise, inspiring, at the same time, someone could pick it up and work with it, run these 8 sessions. But she worked with a man from the Sellersville Clubhouse who was a member of that clubhouse, and he had come, with a, mental health challenge. And she worked with the director of the clubhouse, Lou Morrow, and she worked with other participants in her poetry groups to make that book. And one of the things I love is, knowing Lisa, is that she really did that. And it, I think it shines in the book that it's something that was made as part of the community. So what we did as an institute is we funded the printing of them and have sent them to all the clubhouses in the United States, plus ones in Canada. And we'll probably do another printing and send them also to, clubhouses in Europe. That sense that and already I have people calling me who say, can we work with this? And so Lisa will be working as a consultant for people at these clubhouses so they can make use of this guidebook for making poems and using poems to develop community, have a chance to sort of be heard, for a person to be heard. I think it's something we all want.
Yeah, I think so too. And we're coming close to the end of this segment, and I think I'd like to read a poem that's in her guidebook that's written by Naomi Shihab Nye that speaks about poetry and why we're all doing this work, So yeah. you especially, I include me because I'm writing poetry now and I'm interviewing you for this radio show, but I'm a baby in the field of poetry. Well, but anyway, this poem is called Valentine for Ernest Mann.
Oh.
You can't order a poem like you order a taco. Walk up to the counter and say, I'll take 2. And expect it to be handed back to you on a shiny plate. Still, I like your spirit. Anyone who says, here's my address, write me a poem, deserves something in reply. So I'll tell you a secret instead. Poems hide in the bottoms of our shoes. They are sleeping. They are the shadows drifting across our ceilings the moment before we wake up. What we have to do is live in a way that lets us find them. Once I knew a man who gave his wife 2 skunks for a Valentine. He couldn't understand why she was crying. Quote, I thought they had such beautiful eyes, unquote. And he was serious. He was a serious man who lived in a serious way. Nothing was ugly just because the world said so. He really liked those skunks.
Mm-hmm.
So he reinvented them as Valentines, and they became beautiful.
Yeah.
At least to him. And the poems that had been hiding in the eyes of skunks for centuries crawled out and curled up at his feet. Maybe if we reinvent whatever our lives give us, we find poems. Check your garage, the odd sock in your drawer, the person you almost like but not quite, and let me know. We need to take a break. So to our listening audience, stay with us. And we're going to be coming in our third segment. We're going to be talking about the poetry certification program.
Want to help make our world a better place, but not sure where to start? Tune into Better Worldians Radio with the creators of the social game on Facebook called A Better World. Join hosts Ray, Mary Sue, and Gregory Hansel, who will inspire you to make a big difference in small ways. They'll speak to experts, authors, volunteers, and everyday people who are changing the world daily. Better Worldians Radio is heard live every Thursday at 11 a.m. Eastern Time, 8 a.m. Pacific Time on Voice America Variety.
What can you find on Get Real Radio? Well, quite honestly, who you really are. Join host James Robinson each week for a program designed to reveal more about yourself and your world through words of wisdom and profound guests. You'll discover more about the spiritual movement and how it can work with you and alert you to problems you may not be aware of. It will educate, titillate, and enlighten your mind. Get Real Radio is broadcast live every Friday at 11 a.m. Pacific Time, 2 p.m. Eastern Time on the Voice America Variety Channel. This could end up being the best time of your week. Ready to chat about your favorite soap operas? The Daytime Discussion is here with Dan J. Kroll and Soap Central Live. For the past 15 years, Dan has been dishing and discussing on SoapCentral.com. And now he's taking the talk to the airwaves of the Voice America Variety Channel. You'll go behind the scenes with the biggest stars of daytime, along with guest commentary from the Soap Central columnists. And we'll take your questions and comments during our live show. Soap Central Live, every Friday at 6 p.m. Eastern Time, 3 p.m. Pacific, on Voice America Variety.
The Internet's number one talk station.
Number one talk station.
VoiceAmerica.com.
You are tuned in to Bread for the Journey, ordinary people doing extraordinary deeds, with your host, Mariana Cacciatore. If you have a question or comment about the program, or have an idea for a person you would like featured on a future program, please send an email to bfjradio@gmail.com. That's bfjradio@gmail.com. And now, back to Bread for the Journey.
Welcome back, and we're here talking with the founder and president of the Institute for Poetic Medicine, John Fox, a poet himself and a lover of poetry and of people, I would say. And one of the things the Institute is doing is guiding people through becoming certified poetry therapists. So I think I'd like you to speak in this segment, John, about perhaps just tell us an overview of the certification program and maybe how long it takes. Let's start there.
Sure. Okay. I designed it to be about 2.5-year program. It has three phases. And the first phase is we work with my book, Poetic Medicine, which has 9 chapters, and I feel that I want people to begin this practice with doing their own inner work, with doing their own work, and their own inner work also with others who are in the training program, in the cohort. I call it a cohort. So Poetic Medicine provides, I think, an excellent sort of pathway for that to happen. There's the first chapter in Poetic Medicine is called Heart, Who Will You Cry Out To? And that comes from a line from a poem by Rainer Maria Rilke. Heart, who will you cry out to? And then there's another chapter a little bit later called The Fragile Bond, the relationship between parent and child. And so in that chapter, that's what the poems that are explored, because it's so often in my work, that's the poems that will come up. And then later, though, there's a middle chapter about loss and grief. And I call that chapter When God Sighs, S-I-G-H-S, When God Sighs, I don't know. I can't remember the subtitle right now.
It's all right. It's fine.
But later, I'm also aware, as you know from getting back to that book, Letting the Beauty We Love Be What We Do, is that my relationship to issues like justice and and the world matter. So there's a chapter in the latter part of Poetic Medicine called Poems of Witness, Living with Heart in a Conflicted World. There's a chapter, The Peace of Wild Things, Embracing the Earth to Tell Your Story. And then the last chapter is, There is a Secret One Inside Us. So a sense of the first phase is to do a lot of writing and to be able to share that with your classmates and to have it a time to really get to know ourselves. And certainly, you know, the other thing I want to say about the training program that's important to me is I know people come with a lot of rich gifts as they come to the circle itself. And I don't want to pretend that people are like tabula rasa, where they're only there to learn this. I want them to bring the richness of their experience to the circle. At the same time, we want to select people that are open to learning something new and really to make themselves part of a process. So that's, I would say, a quick description of the first phase. And the second phase is more towards how do I apply this into a practice? And so that's the second phase. And for instance, the first, and this happens online, although we've met about 4 or 5 times. Right now I'm through the first training program, and we're sort of in the beginning phases of phase 3, and we've met 4 times in person at a retreat center, and we get to know each other and can bring guest teachers. And so that's part of what the IPM training program is. In the second phase, first class is, why do I want to practice poetic medicine? Second, I mean, that's kind of, you know, we start mm-hmm. there.
Yeah, it's great.
And second is, how do I hold a safe and creative environment? How do I hold a safe and creative environment? And there's so much, in that one idea of keeping things safe, but you're asking someone to take a risk.
Mm-hmm. Right.
Write down anything on the page. And so then in the middle of the second phase, letting go of judgment, being curious, nurturing and noticing strengths, affirming connection. And in my practice as a poetry therapist, I think, I'm always in the process of letting go of judgment. You know, the third patriarch of Zen, a wonderful, you know, wise teaching, says, to hold up what you like against what you dislike is the disease of the mind. Mm. When I was going to apply for this, going to the creative writing program at Boston University, when I was a junior in high school, I sent some poems to the director of the creative writing program there at BU. I mean, it was so overeager. When I look back, I can't believe I did it. But I asked him, well, what do you think? And so this wonderful guy, George Starbuck, wrote back in his letter. He wrote on Boston University stationery, it takes a long time of getting to know somebody before you can make helpful comments about their poetry. And that sense of bringing a tremendous amount of respect to how we listen to someone's poem is something that I want to be able to communicate.
Yeah, as a poetry therapist working with people, you don't always have a long period of time.
Exactly.
Right. So you have to create that kind of safety and intimacy in a bed of creativity in a short period of time. So it's tricky.
I think what that sentence helps me to do is to be very, and I'm not talking about walking on eggshells, but to be very respectful about how I respond to something and how can I listen to somebody, listen to their poem in a way that helps me get to know them. So one of the things I bring in towards the second part of that phase 2 is an awareness that there's a lot of people with a lot of wisdom, and although I could tell you the sort of the details of poetry therapy as a practice, as a clinical practice, growing up in America in fairly good detail, I'm aware that indigenous people knew this for millennia, and that my sense of my deepest roots about why, like, why does a 2.5-year-old Mariana, why does he point out the window and say to his mother, look, Mom, the clouds, they're like mashed potatoes. Mm-hmm. You know, he's 2.5. He didn't have a class in simile. Mm-hmm. He wasn't told that you have to use like or as to make to make a simile. He made that connection because of some naturally creative impulse in himself to you know, join his world with the larger world. Mm-hmm. And so, I mean, there's a kind of indigenous quality, indigenous to our to our biology,
right?
And our perhaps our spirit. So, coming back to the training, I have a wonderful friend, Lupita McClanahan, who's a Diné woman or Navajo, and she'll talk about how the importance of prayers and their integral part in their culture. So she'll be a guest teacher. And then in phase three, people begin to practice. Like, they'll begin to work in situations where they're bringing this into two people. And that's the phase that this particular class is in right now.
And so you've said it's a combination of online and conference calls and home study and some FaceTime retreats. And and it's 2.5 years. And so tell me now what some of the people are doing with their certifications.
Oh, that's, well, that, you know, we haven't completed it totally, but like I say, we're in phase three.
Right.
I mean, one gentleman, his name is Vitek Nowosiad. He's an immigrant from Poland. But Vitek has been for 17 years a chaplain at the Children's Hospital at Legacy in Dallas, Texas. Actually, it's in Plano, but it's right near Dallas. So he's been a chaplain at this hospital for a long time. And he has been bringing poetry on a weekly basis to the young people on the eating disorders clinic at the hospital.
Mm-hmm.
And giving these young people a voice to talk about whatever they want to in their lives, but it also brings an opportunity for them, someone who's really going to listen to them, but with that sort of emotional or that spiritual or that sort of visceral, quality that poetry can hold, to give expression to their experience. And what he's also done is, I went there a couple of months ago, and we did a program for the staff of the eating disorders clinic, so they could experience what these young people, mostly young girls, not always, but are also doing. So I could just remember this moment where the sort of head physician there, she wrote her own poem, and she turned her head in such a way that said, I said, she just got something really important.
Mm-hmm.
So that's what VTech is doing that.
And then I would like to interrupt for just a moment and say that I did an interview with Kathy Capers, and her name
Birch.
Is just Birch Dwyer, right? And on Bread for the Journey Radios, and they are two people who are in your program right now, living through phase three, who took a group of women down into Canyon de Chelly. And so for our listeners, if you want to know a little bit about that, you can go to the breadforthejourney.org /radio and look for the show with Kathy Capers and Birch Dwyer. And I want to say, John, we're right at about 3 minutes till closing. So we're getting close to the end of our show. Mm-hmm. So rather than just sort of point a question, I want to say, is there anything left that if you ended this interview that would hurt your heart in a way of that it was left unsaid?
Nothing. Well, I don't think things something with you, Mariana, could hurt my heart, but I appreciate you asking. And so I would just encourage someone to take a little time out for themselves and maybe just get a notebook that could be just for you, and that you could record some of your impressions. Like take some time in the morning to write down, you know, what's happening. There's a section in my first book, Finding What You Didn't Lose, a story by from Winnie the Pooh, my first major poet of my life, you know. And he's talking to Piglet, and you know, they're having a little bit of argument, like Winnie the Pooh and Piglet would do. And then Pooh eventually says, it's just about letting things come. And Piglet says, oh, I didn't know. And so...
That's great. And now you know. So let things come.
Letting. There we go. We're back to letting. I mean, there...
We're back to how we began the interview, which is great. So to our listening audience, if they wanted to explore more about you and the work that you're doing, can you give them your website?
I sure can. And I want to just say to everybody that my website is going to be new and improved before long. But right now it's at poeticmedicine.org. And I would say one of the things that is in terms of a practical sense, we have a online journal called the Poetic Medicine Journal. And if you go to the homepage of the website in the upper right, there's a blue button thing that says archive, and you'll find all the editions of the Poetic Medicine Journal there. And we're like, we talked about Lisa, and she'll talk about working at the clubhouse.
That's
or Krista Wissing working with people with traumatic brain injury. Whole range of things. So
I will say too, before we close, I did interview Krista Wissing and Myrna Hecht, who also works.
Yeah.
With. So both, you know, if you go to breadforthejourney.org and click on BFJ Radio, you'll find all those interviews. Just scroll through. So I need to close, John.
Yes.
And I will with this. If you find a place in your heart to make a contribution to the Institute for Poetic Medicine, John just gave you their website, and they could sure use your help. And I would say that as well for Bread for the Journey. And our website is breadforthejourney.org. And I close today, as I do every show, with this. May all beings be happy.
Mm.
May all beings be safe. May all beings be free.
We hope our program inspired you this week. Please join Mariana Cacciatore for another edition of Bread for the Journey next Saturday at noon Eastern Time, 9 a.m. Pacific Time on the Voice America Variety Channel. Enjoy the rest of your weekend.
Thanks again for listening to the preceding program, brought to you on the Voice America Variety Channel. For more information about our network and to check out additional show hosts and topics of interest, please visit voiceamericavariety.com. The Voice America Talk Radio Network is the worldwide leader in live internet talk radio. Visit voiceamerica.com. The views and ideas expressed on the preceding program are strictly those of the host or guests and do not necessarily reflect the views and ideas held by the Voice America Talk Radio Network, its staff, and management.